from the layman to the person that's from Afghanistan, for the general public who just want to know about what's going on in Afghanistan. So we have someone who's an entrepreneur, a humanitarian, someone who's heavily involved in Afghanistan, who has family in Afghanistan and knows the situation on the ground, some of the history of it. So we're going to get to covering many of these important aspects so you, like me, the layman, can get more well-grounded and know what's really going on in Afghanistan with my next guest coming up, Rahmatullah Nowruz, here on The Dean Show. Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you. How you doing, my brother?
Wa alaikum salam, peace be with you. How are you, brother?
Alhamdulillah, rabbil alameen. It's nice to have you on the program.
Jazakallah, mashallah, I've watched this show for all my life. You know, the first time you started Dawah, I was very young in Malaysia, and watching you, that inspiration, mashallah, until now. I wanted to meet you in Malaysia, but I think Subur told me they don't like to travel a lot. So, mashallah, we are meeting here now.
Mashallah, mashallah. What are you talking about when you're young? Look at you, you're still young.
I was young, meaning that when I was 18, 19.
Yeah, you don't look much older than that.
I know I'm 28, so.
Yeah. Mashallah, alhamdulillah. It's very nice to meet you, my brother. May Allah bless you. Tell us, so now, again, we get a lot of requests. Many of us are ignorant. We get fed a lot of what's spoon-fed to us from the media. And most people are hip on, you know, if they've kind of, you know, that red pill, blue pill, you know, they call it, you know, some people get awoken to a lot of the, you know, media lies and deception. So people are coming to us and they want to know what's really going on in Afghanistan. Why don't we start off with the early beginnings, you know, some of the history, and then we'll take it from there. How's that?
Jazakallah khair. Inshallah, this will be a conversation. We will try to answer the question that most people wanted to know. So Afghanistan, for those people who don't know Afghanistan at all, I will give you a brief history. Afghanistan is a country, all our life, the country has been in conflict. If you know it, even from 1,000 years, it's been in conflict, either internally or externally. External reasons, there were invasions from our side because of geographical location, because of the heart of the Asia, you have close contact with Russia, you have close contact with China. And same goes to Pakistan, the sea, and so on and so forth. But we will go only to the 90s in Soviet Union, their invasion, to give them a brief history. So actually, Afghanistan was invaded for multiple reasons. Why the British came in, when they were in India, they were afraid that Soviet Union will come to Afghanistan and then attack them in India. So they attack Afghanistan in advance. And they were there, they couldn't get hold of it. And then the Soviets, they wanted to, of course, rule the world. They did not only invaded Afghanistan, there were war happening everywhere. But they entered Afghanistan, and I believe in 1978, they were there for 10 years. And 1987 or 1989, they left, and ultimately Soviet Union war collapsed in February 1991. And then the Russian Federation was born. So the Soviet, when they were there, actually, to be honest, if I were to compare as an Afghan man, I would compare the Soviet were much better than Americans. Reasons I will tell you. Number one, their values were clear. Why they came there, what they wanted to do, and they had future plans in Afghanistan. They built infrastructure, roads, which exist until today. They built tunnels from Jalalabad to Lahman and other provinces like Kabul. And those tunnels even exist today. The work they have done was actually long-lasting work. It wasn't a temporary work. Unlike Americans, they build everything with piece of wood, plastic. And so the moment they leave, they can just, you know, blast it away. And they did not come with the intention to help the country. They came with their own intention, which we'll discuss. So when Soviet left and Mujahideen, which were heavily funded by the Americans, which is clear, I mean, everybody know about that.
So wait, Pakistan, for the people that don't know, let's stop at that point. So what did you just repeat, rewind? You just said that they were, the Taliban at that time, they were heavily funded. They were pretty much backed Mujahideen. By the Mujahideen. Not the Taliban. Okay.
Not the Taliban.
And how they were pretty much allies to who?
To America.
To America. So this is well known. Yeah, this is documented.
This is well known. And they didn't know that. I mean, ordinary people didn't know that, but the leader, they didn't know. I would tell you, my father was in those groups. And, you know, he was a fighter. He fought against the Russian. He has been hit 2 times by the bullets. Even his one leg is shot. Because these people were fighting on the ground. They didn't know that the money was coming through America.
So they were pretty much by Americans. They were considered heroes.
Yes.
So the Americans at that time, it's interesting how things change now. So at that time, we were prompting the Mujahideen, helping them and considering them heroes.
Yes, because they were achieving American interest.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There were two interests. For example, for Afghan, it was an invasion and was fight between Islam and Kufr. And Americans were seeing it, okay, this is a fight against the Soviets. Why we are fighting in Ukraine, other part of the world? Why not we fund the Mujahideen? We don't have collateral damage. We don't give our soldiers. So let them fight. So the Mujahideen didn't know the money is coming from America. What they used to do, they used to channel the money to Saudi Arabia. And the Saudi sheikhs would go to Afghanistan and give the money in form of donation. But it wasn't actually donation from Saudi, because they cannot carry a war by donation. And the money would come to Pakistan, and Pakistan would form the militant group, the Mujahideen, who were freedom fighters, and then send them to different parts of Afghanistan, and they would fight the Russians. Ultimately, the Russian the Soviet Union collapsed. So in those times, my father was sharing a story. They didn't know. The money would come on donkeys and horses from Pakistan. For example, from Peshawar, there were no proper roads. So my father, he was sharing one story that one day they gave us like a lot of horses with some heavy items on top of it, and we didn't know what it is. So on the way, one horse, he fell down, and then the bags were open, and they found us were all dollars, and they didn't know what dollar is, you know, currency. Wow. Dollar. They didn't know what dollar is. So they packed the money and brought it back to their leaders. So in short, it's a well-documented, everybody knows about that. Even the Mujahideen leaders, they came to Washington, they met, and they translated. The translator was actually the recent guy who fixed the deal between America and Taliban. So this is, I mean, a well-documented story. We don't have to go to details.
Yeah.
That the Mujahideen were funded by the Americans because they were sharing the same interest. That's so, number one. And we will talk about this as well, what Russians did with warring against Americans.
So your family is currently in it. Were you born in Afghanistan?
Yeah, I was born in Afghanistan.
So you're born there. You have history there, obviously. Your family's there. You're heavily involved there with business, humanitarian projects. Is that right?
Yes, true. Yes. Mm-hmm. My family's there. My father is, alhamdulillah, still alive. I have businesses in Afghanistan. We have a number of schools. Yeah. We have an organization, a non-profit organization working on the ground. We have projects all over Afghanistan. I think we have more than 32 projects. We have a dawah and research center in Afghanistan answering people questions about Islam. So, and I've met a lot of people in Afghanistan, if it's from the previous government, if you're the governors, the ministers, sit with them, talk with them, and try to get some permission for the work, and we will discuss, inshallah, in the due time, that the corruption inside the government, so on and so forth. So I just want to come to history of Taliban. Yeah.
So we got you call it the proper term Afghani. Someone from Afghanistan is an Afghani?
He's Afghan, correct? Actually. The Afghani would be the currency. I'm also confusing this, you know?
Okay.
The Afghani is a currency, actually.
So how do you call someone like who's from there? So someone from America, Afghan. American, what?
He's Afghan.
Afghan. So you're an Afghan, yeah. Someone who knows the history well. We got someone, an expert from this area, who's also got a lot of on-the-ground experience working with many of these different organizations, trying to better the society there. Now, for many of us, we get to see the images of what looks like a country blown back into the Stone Age. So a lot of times we get these attacks from much of the hate machine propaganda, like, oh, you Muslims, what have you developed? You know, you guys are backward. Just look at Afghanistan, Iraq. But now let's take it to the second phase. Why did now things turn and the change happen from being supporting and now to creating this now, oh, they oppress women. Oh, we got to come and we have to save them, and et cetera, et cetera. And the tides, everything's pretty much changed. And the images we just have been seeing, it just war torn, just blown back into the Stone Age.
That's true. I mean, the point is, if the Western powers, they would leave these countries alone and they would not send them their weapons and support one time one party, sometimes support both parties so they can fight and they can use their weapons and their guns and they make profit out of it. If they don't do that, I think every country will develop. And they, I mean, look at America, look at their history. I mean, they also had the same age. It doesn't mean that no country can develop and there's a problem in it. For example, look at Malaysia, look at UAE. They had in past 50 years what they have done because they were left alone. Nobody used them for their own agendas and nobody funded them. Nobody created a group amongst them and make them fight each other. So I will come to the brief history post 9/11 when Mujahideen, of course, when Mujahideen basically they kick out Soviet Union out of Afghanistan and they had civil war because of the foreign influence. American was supporting different groups inside the Mujahideen. And of course, you know, other countries supporting different groups. And then the formation of Taliban happened in 1994. And the first military action they took, and they took the government, I mean, the entire Afghanistan in 1996. When they took the Afghanistan, the CIA was already present in Afghanistan. People think it's they came to Afghanistan after 9/11. No, that's completely a false claim. They were in Afghanistan, a northern area of Afghanistan, the CIA, like Black Cooper. There's a book, Directories, written by Steve Kuhl. And they were already present in Afghanistan, planning how to take over Afghanistan. 9/11 was just a blame, you know, for a reason for them to open the doors to enter Afghanistan. Of course, if, for example, even 9/11 happened, let's say 9/11 happened, number one, there was nobody from Afghanistan involved. The plane did not depart from Afghanistan. No citizen, even Osama bin Laden, was in Afghanistan. You have a lot of other ways to pressure a country to give up a human being. You can block money, bank transfer. You can actually sanction them, financial sanctions. You can sanction through medicine, humanitarian, like you can stop even sending them basic items like food and so on and so forth. But they did not use any of those pressures. They right away invaded. And by the way, Osama bin Laden, when he died, I mean, there's a different claim if he died natural death or he was killed by Americans. I was in Pakistan, very close to Iftabad, when they attacked him. And nobody knew in that area. So the point is, the people who claim that Afghanistan Stone Age because of the Muslims, and look, you guys are all Muslim, look at your country, it's not because of us, it's because of you. You understand? You don't leave us alone. And if you change your foreign policies, trust me, we will make things better.
So we hear this term now, never forget 9/11. And like you said, this was used as a pretext to go ahead and invade these different countries. Now you have a lot of, let me just make a disclaimer here. Obviously, Islam, Muslims, we go making this very lucidly clear that Islam has nothing to do with killing innocent men, women, and children. You know, this is something that's very clear in the Quran, in Islam. So, but we have many Americans who now are coming out. You have, I think, almost 4,000 architects and engineers and others who are educating the people that, hold on, you know, this was something of, you know, that this wasn't what they're painting it out to be. You know, like that Building 7, they did an independent study. I believe it was in Arkansas. I'm not sure exactly where, but they said there was no way that this Building 7 or these buildings could just come down by fire. And we've discussed this before on the program. So it's interesting. This is how everything, this was a catalyst that kicked everything off. But now you have so many people who are demanding a new investigation, et cetera, et cetera. That's not the topic of the show, but it's linked back because of this. Islam was now under attack, Muslims under attack, countries invaded under this pretext. So what do you have to say about that?
Actually, there are two types of people. For example, in America, there are innocent civilians who've been misused, their money, their tax money, and their trust, everything being misused by the politicians and people in power who are actually looking for economical reasons. There is no other missions rather than economical reasons to invade countries and go and wage war on them and label them, some with the terrorist and some with the different labels. And I'm sorry for people who are actually being misled by their lies. So yesterday, the people who were fighting Russians, they were heroes and they were freedom fighters. And today, people are fighting American invasion, they're terrorists. So you can see the difference. And as I said earlier, they have bombarded them with lies. And I remember my mother-in-law was sharing, she was in America at that time in 9/11. The whole TV channels, the entire media outlets were only talking about Afghanistan. And they were discussing the stories. And then they were sharing, unfortunately, some people also do that. I'm not denying that these countries have no problems, countries like Afghanistan. No, we do have thousands of problems, just like the Western countries. We have different problems than yours. They were regularly sharing that a woman was being lashed by a man. Yes, I understand that. There is a problem with that. But to discuss those problems, the only solution is to invade them? No, that's not the solution. For example, in Germany, the country that I'm living right now, you have domestic violence every hour against a woman. Like, we will speak for hours. And imagine every hour, there are 40,000 women reporting every year. And every year, there's domestic violence against women. So now, Americans should invade Germany to fix this problem. I mean, if they look at their own problems, like single motherhood, the issue of HIV cases, the issue of homelessness, but they don't talk about those problems. Yeah. When they have domestic problems, they try to portray other countries, oh, there's a problem. Let's be heroes and let's invade them and let's feed them democracy so they can live better life. And when they go there, they literally kill people. And out of that killing, they make profit. And we can go into the details of how much Americans actually made from Afghanistan by going to war. And I'm seeing every media outlet is keep on saying that we have spent trillions of dollars. No, America actually made trillions of dollars out of Afghanistan. And we will discuss that too.
That's a good point, because that's something here that's kind of hush-hush. You don't see much media coverage of the sex trade. It's such a big industry here in the U.S. And The pedophile rings and the pornography, incest. I mean, through the roof, you know, an epidemic, you know, of kids being molested and sex trade and all these things that are just kind of not talked about by the media, but they're happening. And then the hypocrisy, pointing fingers at, you know, other places for women's rights. But, you know, obviously we should be for human rights all over the place. But then to go ahead and I think people see through this, the pretext that's used to go ahead and now go ahead and plunder and go ahead and talk to us about, yeah, what you just said, like how much, you know, the we're told that in Afghanistan, you have, lithium, you have the $1 trillion of minerals, all of these things, the poppy seeds, you know, big business, you know, Iraq, it was oil here. What's the interest? Because you have other countries that now you can go ahead and invade that, you know, people are, you know, oppressing women or doing certain things, which again, it's nothing to do with Islam. But what kind of money is Afghanistan sitting on that now would entice others to come in and try to plunder from it? And was this actually happened? Was this proven to happen?
Yes. Okay. Let's look at it in two ways. Number one, people need to understand the American government is printing money and they can bring money out of thick air. So for them to say that we spend trillions of dollars, it's not like they took a cash out of their own banks and took it to Afghanistan and spent it on people. No, they just printed papers and brought it to people. And how they're benefiting it. If anybody would understand how the currency system works, if there is a demand for a currency and you print your currency and spend it, you create a demand. That's how you can value your currency. You can print more money. For example, if there was no Afghanistan war and they would print $3 or $2 trillion, then the value of dollar will be lower than a lot of currencies because the demand is not there in the market, but they printed more money. So if they invade a country and they make everything in dollar in that country, that means they created a demand in that country. So therefore, the American dollar became more stronger and therefore they made a profit out of it. For example, I will tell you. When Saudi Arabia, they stopped actually, when the standard of gold after World War II was by Nixon, President Nixon, it was, you know, they chose not to use standard of gold anymore in the currency. And countries like Germany and France, they were demanding because the Americans gave them loan. And then they took back, they said, okay, you know what, if I give you loan, for example, I think a $12 billion, And if you give me this money back, I can give you gold in return. So when they were demanding their own money, okay, take back your currency, the paper money, and give me the gold now. And they say, well, you know what? We don't have that much gold. So there was no demand for American dollar. Why should I keep American dollar? Because it's a paper. So they talked to Saudi Arabia, and Saudi Arabia decided to sell their oil only with dollars. And their demand was created. So all the countries needed dollars in order to buy the oil. So that's how the demand of the currency is created. Now coming back to Afghanistan. When American invaded Afghanistan, they brought their own defense contractors. Everybody was brought from America. Companies, like I can list a lot of companies. Even the military contracts like Blackwater, the people on the ground fighting were not actual American army. They were subcontractors, a private company were fighting in Afghanistan. And they were given complete immunity that even if you kill 10,000 children, no court will even appeal against you.
Yeah, we heard it. And there's different documentaries like Dirty Wars, yes, and whatnot. The atrocities that many of these contractor groups, they were, you know, raping women. They were doing so many, killing innocent people. Yeah, talk about that.
I will come to that. So just want to talk about this, their profit, how much they made in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So when they came to Afghanistan with their money, they also brought people and they paid them highest amount of salary because that money was printed in name of Afghanistan anyway. So if you're coming as a computer scientist, you were given salary, 40,000 a monthly salary, 50,000, that much. So imagine, I will talk about only one of the company that is very famous. And do you know the Pepsi Coca-Cola bottle? How much was calculated for American Army? $40. Coca-Cola, small Coca-Cola. $40. The wow. Pricing were huge. Washing a piece of clothes, you know, this piece of clothes would cost American Army $100. And you can do it behind the base with 10 cents. So that's how they channel back the money to America. And they use the label that this money was spent in Afghanistan. No, the money was not spent in Afghanistan. It was channeled back to America. So I will tell you some of the companies, how much they made out of this Afghanistan and even some of the Iraq. Like Holliston, the KBR logistic company, they had $39.5 billion in contract. Can you believe that? $39.5 billion.
Almost $40 billion, huh?
Yes, that's what their contract. For example, out of this time, like the 10 years or the 20 years, their CEO, I think I remember his name, their CEO made $35.9 million, only their CEO. Can you imagine that? So the money was not given to Afghan, by the way. And again, the second company, which is the Titan basically made, again, billions of dollars out of this, and their CEO made $47.2 million only in 2004. Casey, JB London, was a CEO who made $22.9 million from the war in Afghanistan.
Didn't they have the former vice president and other politicians here? They had vested interests in many of the weapons manufacturing companies.
Yes, wow. They have invested. So when people say we have spent $2.9 trillion in Afghanistan, that's a complete lie. I will tell you, I have traveled all over Afghanistan. We do not have a single hospital for people to do their heart surgeries, kidney surgeries. You don't have any of the hospital. We don't have a school, a single school with LCD screen there. Thousands of students are studying on the stones, actually.
Where the money
go? The money was not spent in the first place. You do not have a single highway in Afghanistan. You do not have a single hospital, single school. No base was built by the Americans. Even the biggest base, Bagram, it was all built by, you know, using woods, nothing proper infrastructure. Look at the roads. So the money was not spent in Afghanistan. They just printed in the name of Afghanistan, was channeled back to America. And that's how they made money from their own. They created demand. Okay. They created demand and they made everything in dollar in Afghanistan, like even cargo silver dollars, everything with dollars. And then they printed and then they channeled back to America, despite how much they took from the minerals, how much they took from the land, how much they took from other countries, but they also took from the NATO and from the Europe, from Australia, but who benefited the most? I'm doing research on this matter, how much America actually benefited from 20 years of war in Afghanistan.
How much is that around, approximately?
I think it's more than $5 trillion.
So it was a big racket, as they call it. It's a big big racket, and a lot of plundering, yes, a lot of people getting rich on the backs of the Afghan people.
Yep, and they tested their medicine in Afghanistan. I will tell you, if a pharma industry was trying to come with some sort of medicine, they would send it to Afghanistan for the test.
Use as guinea pigs?
Yes, they have tested their weapon in Afghanistan. If a weapon company would come and they want to see it actually on the ground before they sell it to Gulf countries and to other countries, they would test that weapon in Afghanistan. For example, the mother of all bomb, 100,000 tons something, they dropped that bomb in Afghanistan for what? For the reason of test, to how much damage it can actually make. So it was well documented so they can sell it on other countries.
Here's, let me tell you just kind of what the feeling on the ground, you know, usually the layman is like, okay, we have to go over there. This is what they've been sold, that we have to go over there. Otherwise, they're going to come over here. So those people over there in the cave who are just, you know, without a TV, they don't even really care what's going on. Like you gave a great example of the donkey with the money, and they didn't even know about the, what's this? So somehow people have been brainwashed, you know, programmed to believe that, hold on, those terrorists, they don't, those Muslims over there in Afghanistan, Iraq, they hate us so much. They hate our way of life. That's the main message. They hate our way of life. So they came over here. They took down, you know, they attacked us. And now we have to go over there so they don't come here again. What would you say to the average American or anyone who had this talk with you and they brought this up to you? How would you respond to that?
Excellent question. I think they should watch some of the YouTube videos, the YouTubers who have been to Afghanistan, their people, okay, the YouTubers that they follow and they are subscribed to, and see what's the response of the people against America and American people. Secondly, you give them business opportunities and travel visa, everyone would love to come to America for a few days and go back to his own country. So if there was hatred, nobody would even apply for the visa. You can see how many people are applying annually to America for either business purposes or travel, so on and so forth. Nobody hates other country. Why they should hate? And if they hate anyone, if, for example, let's assume they hate non-Muslims, right? Why they don't attack India close by? Muslims rule India for 800 years. Why did not kill everyone there? Why they don't attack nearby country? Like, you know, you have non-Muslim in Afghanistan. We do have Sikhs in Afghanistan. We have Hindus. Why don't we attack them? Now, if you don't attack them, why should we attack you? Number one, that's a false propaganda. They're giving them that they hate our way of life. No, we Muslims, we love our own way of life. We might disagree with you on certain things, but Islam does not give us any legitimacy to hate you or to attack you for no reason. So that's a wrong and false information they're getting.
I had a true story. I personally had I was on a call with a person by the name of Jason. He was in the Marines and he spent some time in Afghanistan. So he wanted some advice because his story started off with him going to Afghanistan and then having what they call someone shadow him. That's like an interpreter, someone from Afghanistan. And he said it left such an impression on Jason, the American, the Marine there in Afghanistan, that the kindness that he experienced, he'd never experienced this back at home. So that was number one. Number two, the Afghan who was there with him gave him a copy of the Quran. So for those that don't know, the not yet Muslims, the Quran is the verbatim word of God Almighty Allah. I suggest you read it. So he actually read the Quran, and what opened his heart to reading the Quran was the kindness that he experienced from the Afghan people there. And now so much so that he's almost like, you know, he's like, if you ask me, he's Muslim because he's praying, he's doing everything, he's reciting, because to pray, you have to recite the Shahada. Yeah, but he hasn't come out formally. He's scared because what his wife now, she's from Romania and she's Orthodox Christian, and he's scared like what's going to happen, the repercussions of that. He's not going to be able to go with her to church on Sunday. He's going to have to cut out pork, you know, and et cetera, et cetera. She's going to be getting really worried. Like, why aren't you eating the pork? Why aren't you coming with me? So that's his dilemma. Anyways, so many cases of this, of people going down there and experiencing it, Afghan and the people, the society for themselves, and seeing through the propaganda. Have you experienced this also, where people have thought one way and then they actually got on a plane, they got down, or they connected with Muslims and now their impression totally changed?
That's true. Actually, if you are coming through your politician, do you trust your politician 100%? When it's talking about your internal affairs, if you don't trust him on your internal affairs 100%, then why do you trust him on external affairs? What was the reason for them to invade and wage war in Vietnam? What was the reason for other countries? Was that they hated the way you live whatsoever? What was the reason for Indians? What is the reason, for example, inside the Mexican, the cities that were taken away from the Mexicans and their brutal killings? So you don't have reason. They need reason to invade countries and to profit from it. And they use you as a tool to give them justification to do that. If you really want to know about how Muslims are, I mean, what the Muslim thinking are or Afghan thinking are in general, you go and simply talk to one human being. That's it. From that, you know, country or from that belief. And if you find him like violence and so on and so forth, then yes, you're right. But I would say 100% that you'll not find any of them intending to harm you, but they would love to help you. As I mentioned, YouTubers, the reason I mentioned YouTubers, because they would trust them. They have come to Afghanistan, and even their videos for Pakistan, that everything is free in Pakistan. If you come as a foreigner to a country, they will not even take money from you. If you buy something small or big, they will say, you know what, you're a guest. Look at the hospitality.
Wow. When they go to UAE, give it free, huh?
Yes, there are videos, actually, you can see it. When you see Qatar and Oman in these countries, they are Muslim too. You don't have the same feeling about them because they are rich. Maybe that's the reason. You know, rich Muslim is a good Muslim, poor Muslim is a bad Muslim. What's the reason? But personally speaking, you know, Facebook and social media, everything is there. Why don't you talk to somebody instead of having a... What happened usually, when I tell you, for example, like Muhammad Hijab is a very aggressive human being. For example, he's not, by the way. And if I meet one day Muhammad Hijab and I tell him, okay, because I was told already that he's an aggressive human being, even though with love and compassion, maybe that's his character, he squeezed me a little bit because he loved me and because he's very compassionate. And I would say, you know what, he's an aggressive human being because I was told. I know it's very difficult to differentiate the subconscious feeling that we have against somebody sometime. And it's not our own feelings. Like Noam Chomsky, who said the construction consists, that the choices that we are making are not our choices, actually other people's choices, but we think that they're our choices. So if you're making a choice against the Muslim or against any person that your politician, your media is telling you that they're so, maybe you should see to it, is that really your choice? Or you were fed through media outlets that that's your choice and that's how you should react to it.
Let's go back a little bit and look at the history after the Russians left the Soviet Union. And now something that, again, was happening on the ground. Tell us, we hear of these warlords and, again, differentiating Islam and the actions of human beings who go away from Islam and they end up doing certain things. Specifically, there was this nationalism. And we know the last and final messenger sent to mankind, Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings be upon him, who I often say is a brother to Jesus, Moses. They all came with the same message, worship one and only one God, creator of the heavens and the earth. So Prophet Muhammad, he warned us of this nationalism. He said, it stinks. You know, it's something rotten to the core. Was this happening at that time? And could this have been something that led to a lot, even more evil on the ground? Can you talk about this?
Yes, unfortunately, as I mentioned earlier, the group were fighting the Russians. There were no doubt people independently fighting. And there were some of them fighting owned by foreign powers like America and some other countries. So when the fighting was over, every one of them wanted to have some sort of power and authority. Somebody wanted to become the prime minister. Somebody wanted to have like the presidency system, republican system, some different ideology were there. And that actually escalated to internal civil war. And they were fighting between each other. In Islam, fighting is prohibited. And, you know, you cannot fight over power, over nationalism, as you mentioned rightly. And there's a hadith of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, anybody who fought for land or tribal reason, he's not one of us. Even if he died, you cannot label him as a mujahid or shaheed, so on and so forth. So those were the reasons. And with those reasons, of course, when there's a civil war, a lot of atrocities happen, just like after the war in Germany, when, you know, the Americans and English soldiers, they came into Germany, they raped, I think, over 40 I think over 40,000 women. And because there was no control, it's a well-documented history. So a lot of rape took place. There were a lot of violence. And that's how Taliban group was formed. Taliban actually mean Talib al-Ilm. And by the way, I have to make this clarification that I'm not side of anybody. I'm not here to represent Taliban or to, you know, affirm what they have done. They have done horrible stuff. We will discuss on this live show as well. They're not free from error. And we are not saying everything Taliban is doing part of Islam or everything they have done is completely Islamic. No, they have mistakes. And the things they have done correctly, we will praise them. Things they have done wrong, we will definitely criticize them and point out this is what they have done is wrong. So
That's a good point. Let's stop right there. We're trying to get some education. We're not here trying to promote any political group, but at all costs, we will try to bring the true message of Islam and differentiating what Islam says and, you know, from what the what people might what end people up doing that's opposite to Islam.
It's true. That's how when there was civil war and a lot of, problems on the ground. So the Taliban, there was a rape case of a girl. I won't go to more details because we have other matters to discuss. So the Taliban group was formed. And since they were not affiliated to any other parties and they only wanted to establish Islamic government, and they were mostly students from madrasa. So they were students like maybe from 20 to 30 and 40, very young people, their demographic. And then they started to get people's love and attention. And then they formed their own government in 1996. The military, there were some military actions too. And they formed their own government. And the government was well established all over Afghanistan, but not in some areas like northern areas. They couldn't capture those areas. And they were still fighting with Taliban, like Ahmad Shah Massoud was fighting Taliban, and other people fighting, like Dostum was fighting with Taliban. There was still fighting going on. But that was the background of Taliban. And Taliban were not accepted by many countries. They only were accepted by, I believe, Iran, UAE, and Pakistan, or Saudi Arabia. Even American did not accept them as a government. They were mostly working with Northern Alliance, which were active at that time. So that's a background. And when American invaded Afghanistan, so what they do, number of mistakes, I would say. Number one, the invasion itself was a mistake. Even if you plan to invade a country, you don't have to do it like that blood bath that you give to the country. I think over 300 or 400,000 people died because of that. The second mistake they did, they brought people in power were all corrupt warlords. They were not trusted by anybody on the ground, by civilians. And then they created a different groups in tribalism, sort of like, okay, you're a Tajik, you have to support your leader. You're Uzbek, you have to support your leader. They brought people into parliament who could not read and write their own names. They were all Americans. They just, you know, they brought by American. For example, President Karzai was informed that you have become president. Come. Can you believe that?
Wow.
President Karzai was in Kandahar, and a CIA agent and Quetta, he informed him that you have become a president, come back to Kabul. So then he had to come to Kabul, and that's how this thing all started. So second mistake American did, number one, they invaded Afghanistan. Number two, they chose people to lead the country who were the least choice people by the country, or something like the least fit.
The least qualified?
Yeah, the least qualified, the least fit for the positions. People, as a minister, they could not read and write their own name.
Wow.
The parliament members. And the only thing they knew is killing, and nobody loved them, actually. The second thing was, when they killed all the Talibans, they did not plan how their children will react, how their grandchildren will react, their neighbors, and they will utilize them. So there was no such plan for them. There was no such plan. They thought, okay, we have got rid of them, so over. And now we have everything. And they thought, well, we buy our people with cash. And that was not true. They tried to flood the country with a lot of cash. And they tried to buy everybody, but they couldn't. There were people who were fighting for the deen, for their, you know, for their ghaira and for their country. They were freedom fighters. And people were with them. And the government that they formed was corrupt to the degree that you don't have measure. And that other problem that was there, actually, they couldn't build infrastructure. They couldn't give proper justice. The economy was fictional. There was no actual economy. Americans were paying people salary for 20 years. They did not build any factories or economic, they did not increase the GDP. So they were paying, they made them heavily dependent on America. So everything they were saying. And Americans were so involved that even a sub-governor, if you want to be sub-governor, you need to have the approval of Americans. They were so involved. For example, my father was sub-governor in Afghanistan. And I talked to some of the Americans on the ground, the army from Blackwater. And do you believe, brother, that they were actually in prison? These defense contractors, they went to the prisons and told them, if you want to fight in Afghanistan, we will free you and you can go and you will get this much pay. Because the guy was, I talked to many.
There was, since you mentioned that, were there also, as I remember having a guest on, and he was talking about a woman by the name of Afia Siddiqui, and they were he was talking about how they had people who were taking innocent people and accusing them of terrorism to get paid. The government was paying like $50,000 or some money. It was like a racket of human beings just to go ahead and be able to have the pretext to go ahead and get the funding to continue this war on terror. Did you hear about that? Do you know about that?
Yes, it's true, because they took anybody to just prove that there's action going on. And second thing is, the Americans themselves funded the violence of, they created their own groups. I have firm belief the Americans created their own groups to create war so they can say to the international community, there's a war, therefore we are staying. You understand? And second thing is, I would tell you, my father was sub-governor. Sub-governor is a big guy, by the way. President, governor, and sub-governor in the region. And few times my father asked the Americans, because sub-governor in the government, he was in close contact with Americans. He asked them, why do you drop weapons to the other parties? They literally drop weapons at night to different groups. And then my father was told it was done by mistake. How you do that mistake like 1,000 times? They were dropping weapons in areas to create conflict. So there is a reason for them to stay in that area, and there was reason for economical progress.
I don't think you're going to hear. We're getting the inside scoop of what was really happening on the ground with someone who knows the day-to-day activity that's been happening, the history. And I'm really thankful that you're sharing this with us so people can get a better perspective. You're not going to get this, you know, on the mainstream channels. So please continue on. I wanted to ask you, so how many innocent people again actually died? Waiting for our guest. We have a little bit of a hiccup with the technical. We lost you there. Hello?
Sorry.
Okay, we lost you there. Okay, so what I was asking was, so people are not going to go ahead and get this from the mainstream media. We got you really sharing some, exposing many of the things that are happening there. Thank you again for being with us. Continue on, but tell us again, for those that missed it, how many innocent people, these are innocent men, women, and children, were actually, what are the conservative numbers of people that were killed there on this war?
I would say that we don't have the exact figures because no calculation, but you can say last year 40,000 people died. So we're talking about civilians and everyone. So in general, I would say about 800 to a million people have lost their life in this war on terror of America.
800,000 to a million. Would you say that's a pretty conservative number?
This is a number that I would calculate based on the figures on the ground, but not a figure from the UN, because they don't have proper figures. But if I calculate, for example, last in 2018 or 2020, there were 40,000 people killed, only the army members of the previous government. So imagine 40,000 only in the army. So then you can calculate that with civilians and the police and other people.
I got a bunch of more questions before we run out of time. Have you ever, and to add to these numbers, to give people kind of a visual picture, you had this documentary, I don't know if you've ever seen it, called Dirty Wars. And they show how people would be at a wedding. And I mean, again, these are people, just imagine yourself. I say, just imagine you, your like daughter's getting married. And next thing you know, you got foreign troops coming in and they kill half of your family on a wedding night, for example, right? And these are actual things that happen, a drone attack, boom, destroys a whole village, a whole town. Hospitals. Innocent people. These are people who are farmers, people in the cave. They don't even have a TV, for crying out loud. Yeah. Minding their own business. They don't care about you. They don't care about your way of life. They're just trying to live their way of life. And next thing you know, they got a bomb in their backyard. So these are the kind of things that we're instigating, creating, you know, people to hate you. So these are the kind of things that it's important to bring to light. So go ahead, continue on.
This is a true story, actually. The Americans have bombed cities, hospitals, wedding parties, graduation ceremonies. And when they were asked why you did that, sorry, it was a mistake. You understand?
Wow.
Sorry, it was a mistake. And imagine when you kill somebody's daughter, or son, father, their loved one, the hatred they will have for you. But despite that, right now, when Taliban took over again, they're saying there's a general amnesty. We have forgiven everyone. Let's mind our own business and don't get involved with us. Even now, Americans are creating, the Western powers are creating different problems. And if we have time, we will discuss about what's in the future for Afghanistan. They will create different problems for Afghanistan. But hopefully, I would say whatever that happened in the past, if they kill people in Afghanistan, there will be accountable day of judgment, no doubt in that. If the people on the ground, the militant group on the ground, kill innocent people, there will be accountable day of judgment. They will answer those things. But right now, what we can do is to ask people before they think about something else, they should educate themselves and do not trust their politician, because they fail in Iraq, they fail in Vietnam, they fail in Afghanistan, and they fail in other countries as well. Do not trust them again and question your politician that why they have certain policy against certain countries.
This is an important point here. You mentioned the forgiveness now, that they are choosing to forgive. Now, I don't think they're just doing this off of their own whims and desires, because the natural way for the human being, they want revenge, right? So from here, and you can look at, like, you name how many innocent people were killed and whatnot. But if you look at the example, would you connect it to a unique part in history where you had the Prophet Muhammad, last and final messenger sent to mankind, after the persecution of the Muslims at that time for how many years, and the boycotts and the, you know, killing of so many innocent people, when Prophet Muhammad came back the victor in Mecca with an army of 10,000 strong, he ended up forgiving the people. You think they're trying to follow this example?
Yeah, hopefully. Hopefully this.
We don't know. I'm not. I'm just. You know. Yes. We're connecting the dots.
What I'm trying to say is they have given this example of the Prophet Sallam.
They have.
And yes, they have given the example, but the Prophet Sallam, he proved it in action. But so far,
action has to be action.
It's only been in word. So I wouldn't take it very serious until it's been proven in word, action. These are just mere words. And of course, Muslims are inspired by that. And by the way, what's interesting part is what the Taliban did is basically did the same thing. They took their biggest enemy and said, okay, you know what? He will be our leader, meaning that he will be part of the government. He will be part of the group. And just like Prophet Sallam, Abu Sufyan, he considered his house a safe house. He said to Khalid bin Walid, and everybody, he gave them a lot of respect, and they are doing the same thing. But the difference is, Prophet Muhammad, he proved it in action, and Taliban are saying it, and they have not done anything wrong until now, but I don't know exactly, because we have to wait and give them time to prove if what they have said is they're going to show it in action as well, or they're just mere words.
Do you see somewhat also a hypocrisy here when you have, you know, places like France, you know, oppressing women, and particularly the Muslim women, you know, who are trying to go ahead and adhere to the commands of God Almighty, the Creator, you know, their God-given rights, and now they're being oppressed. And now you have over here, nobody's really talking about that, but over here now everybody's worried about the women in Afghanistan. Like, do you see kind of like a hypocrisy?
Of course there's a hypocrisy, and to the level that we cannot describe it. But if what's happening in France, people can't go to school and they can't get education because they're wearing certain types of clothes, and nobody's talking about that. But what's happening in Afghanistan, there's a discussion. And this is a huge level of hypocrisy. I would say my two sisters are both medical doctors, and they're in Afghanistan.
Wait, say that again. Hold on. So you have two sisters who live there,
and they're both medical doctors. Yes.
Yeah. You made a statement. You said if the women are uneducated, the whole family is uneducated. Powerful statement.
Yes. That's how we look at it. From my family, I mean, every family in Afghanistan, who would not want their children to get education?
But the thing is, where people get this kind of mixed up, obviously, I mean, you know, we want, there's a first, our priorities is to get to know the purpose of life, to get to know our creator. Yeah. So that's like where people go off and they chase everything else. But that's, and then you can build off that, obviously. What do you say about that?
The point is that when people are giving a certain way of life, and they think that's the only way of life would give us happiness. And when we look at their own life, which is miserable, they don't have internal happiness, and they don't know what's going to happen to them, what the purpose of their life is. When we know, and at the same time, we want to get the best of this dunya in akhirah. As I was talking about my sisters, mashallah, they're Muslim, very proper hijab, going to university. They're both medical doctors, saving lives. So now, if my sister would come to France, they would not become medical doctors because of the French government.
Wow.
But nobody would point out that these two girls are not getting education because they want to wear hijab. You understand me?
Yeah.
So same problems. Yes, in Afghanistan, we do have problems. I'm not denying it at all. We don't have proper facilities. We're not giving everything. But we are acknowledging our problems. And we don't mind if the Western countries acknowledge our problems too and correct us and help us to overcome those problems. If they can do that, we'll be very happy. But they should do the same thing. They should point out, the media should point out what's happening in France to the people of faith and what's happening in Afghanistan to the innocent people. They should point out both. But what they do, they always talk about Afghanistan and what's negative, but they don't talk about their own countries, what's happening in their own land and how they're treating the Muslims or women in general.
Yeah, what place, what society? I mean, there's problems, you know, people are, you know, homes are filled with problems, countries are filled with problems, but that's what you're, you know, pointing out. It's like people who now you have your neighbor is coming and complaining about your son or daughter, and they're forgetting about, you know, again, it's one thing trying to come and help and whatnot, but now they're trying to shine the spotlight on one of your children. They did something wrong, but over here, their kid is involved in, you know, all sorts of evil and corruption, bullying the whole school, you know, on drugs, on alcohol, on the gang. He's a mafia guy, cartel. Hey, hold on, man. You know, it's like, I think it was it Jesus, peace be upon him, who we love and revere as one of the mightiest messengers, talking about, get that, you know, before you talk about someone's else, a speck in the eye, get that log out of your eye. So you see a lot of, that's the thing, that blatant hypocrisy, you know, and thank God that many people all over the world are starting to wake up and see that.
And I think that's the reason they left Afghanistan, because people are waking up and look at California homeless problem. They don't talk about that, but they want to spend trillions of dollars in Afghanistan. Why? Why you cannot just build them houses and let them not stay on the street? These are fundamental questions people should ask. What about the student debts? What's happening? Every American is in debt and is dying in debt. And people are suffering because of student debt and the credit problem and the housing problem. And you have every sort of problem. Every woman is working 2-3 jobs. Every man is working 2-3 jobs. And people are sleeping on the street. It's rough. And they don't have medical condition. Look at the medical facilities in America and the insurance system. People should look at their own problems before they finger somewhere else. Yes, you can point out their mistakes, but acknowledge your own as well. That what they do, unfortunately, and when they go to Afghanistan and other countries, you know, the American media, what they do it like this. This is heaven, and this is America. And we are a perfect nation. So therefore, we should follow our way of life. And that's wrong. Because we're not.
What do you have to, can you comment on what people are seeing, the visual of like the planes taking off and people falling off the planes and that?
Yes. So there is a panic attack. Yes, there's a panic attack with people who work with Americans, even though Taliban have announced general amnesty. But again, I've said it just in words. I haven't seen it in action, meaning that we need some time to prove if it's true or not. People do have panic attack. And there, because of civil war. For example, if I'm in the government, I've killed somebody from Taliban, and now I'm afraid for myself. My son has done that. I was, for example, a police guy, and I've done something. I was in charge of the prison. I was translator. I took the American to some people's houses to search them, assured them where to drop a bomb. So, of course, there's a fear, just like fear in the Uganda. There was after, you know, that massacre, there was a fear. And second thing is, now what they want to do by showing some of the images in some of the, you know, Americans' army holding babies, there's also a form of propaganda that we are leaving, therefore people are coming after us. I would say, yes, there is a fear. I'm not denying that. There's a fear. But 85 or 90% of people, they just want to leave the country economical reasons. They want to come to Germany or to US or to UK for more economical reasons. It's not because of safety. If any country, you give the same announcement in Mexico, people will be dropping off the plane. Like without visa, without plane ticket, everything is free. I will give you the document. You can live here. Come. You give the same announcement to Iran, people will do the same. You give the same announcement to any country. Who doesn't want to travel and live in a different country free of charge? I would choose to do that. You understand me? Unless, and of course, you have destroyed the country. You have destroyed the economy. There was, everything was fake. You were dropping the money and running the economy and you're gone. Of course, there's a people are scared for themselves, for the economy, so on and so forth. The second thing what they want to do, I believe, they want to take away the talents from Afghanistan. Everyone who is there right now, who was trained in Afghanistan, for example, the engineers, the doctors, and the pharmacists, the physicists, a lot of people, they are literally pointing out people who are with good education, and they're accepting their application. Do you believe that? So they can take out the talent from Afghanistan and leave the next government with empty hands, and you cannot build a country by reciting Suri Falak and Suri Nas and saying, chuf, the country can't be built. They want to create the next problem. Economical, they would say, you know what? We left. Look at them now. So there are political reasons to it as well.
What do you think, what do you foresee now with your family being there, you know, you being born there, you have a lot of experience, you know, with things that are going on. What do you foresee in the future? Do you see light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see now change for the positive taking place?
Yeah. I have noted 6 points that I want to talk about what's the future of Afghanistan. And generally speaking, I'm very happy that America have left. And I'm extremely happy that they have left, honestly. Because with their presence, nothing was in good order. And since they have left, now it's up to us, Afghan, to rebuild that country. And inshallah, make it a good example of a Muslim leadership. And make it a good example of a place where everybody is welcome, Muslim, non-Muslim, and they can come live in peace. I think we are definitely capable of that, and we can inshallah do it. For the future of Afghanistan, hopefully the Taliban form an inclusive government of everyone. If it's from every tribe, Tajik, Hazara, Uzbek, Pashtun, everybody is involved, it will be the best thing to do. If not, the Taliban will be overtaken, or the new government might come in power in next 5 or 10 years. Because if there is no peace, people should see themselves in the government. These people should see part of the progress and part of the change. If they don't see it, of course, they will be against it. The second thing is, if we can bring people closer to each other and, you know, make them to work out with each other, because it's very difficult after 40 years of war and killing and destruction, people, there will be psychological problem with people. I hope if they can come together and forget what happened in the past and focus on the future. It is a difficult job to do because Uganda is still suffering and they're still struggling with those things. But hopefully they can overcome this challenge and come together. Because honestly speaking, last week, my own nephew who was born, my sister was looking forward to have a son for 10 years. He was born and my sister was extremely happy to a degree that whenever he would sleep, my sister would wake him up because he slept for too long. I hope nothing happens to him, you know. She was scared if he sleep for too long, she was scared if something would happen to him. And that little child for 1.5 months old, he was killed in the crossfire between the Taliban and the government. So imagine my own angles, my relatives have been killed. It's very difficult to forgive and move on. But we as a Muslim have to do that because we believe in Akhir and the reward from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The third challenge that the future of Afghanistan is holding is basically economical challenges. The previous economy was created virtually in a fake economy by the Americans, flooding their money, channeling back to there is no actual GDP or actual growth or domestic products and services. So it's a huge challenge for the people to create the economy, but it's okay if we challenge the economy as long as we have the peace. The fourth, as I mentioned earlier, the Western countries, they are taking away talent from Afghanistan, engineers, web developers, software developers, they're taking them away. It would be a great challenge for us to find talents in Afghanistan. Right now, I wanted to hire three people for one of my startup and for the organization. It's very difficult to find people who actually know the work, because the most of the talent is gone from the country and they're living now in the Western countries, paying their taxes and working. Because if a child is born in, for example, in Germany, the government is spending €200,000 until he become the age of 20 or something to pay back the taxes. So imagine you can get somebody from Afghanistan, from third world countries, to not spend, you don't have not any investment, he can come back to the country and fulfill the jobs and pay taxes. It's a win situation for these countries. They don't have to invest on the child, actually. So that's a great challenge for Afghanistan, talent and education. Again, I said in my previous interviews as well, that real education, we have only 20% people who are really, really educated, and they have left, most of them, Afghanistan, they have left. It would be a great challenge to form a new education system and to educate people. At least it'll take maybe 20, 30 years. And again, the sixth problem is that the Afghanistan is facing is a secular Muslims. I hope that the Taliban continue leading the way of the Prophet ﷺ and getting the example from there, just like he was leading a leadership and Medina, but he also a da'i in Mecca. So if we can bring both periods together, the period of Medina and the period of Mecca, there should be da'wah going on. There should be education. People should be regularly educated about Islam and Islamic leadership. At the same time, there should be firm leadership upon justice and upon haq and upon the Islamic principles. If they can follow these three principles of justice, harmony, and peace, with giving quality of life to people, and hopefully this country will flourish. It will be a great example of Muslims and Islam in the whole world, inshallah.
Before we conclude, this is not something that is made up. It's a fact that there was over $500 million spent by the Pentagon to go ahead and create fake terrorist videos, lies, you know, this negative propaganda. So anybody can look this up. This is just fact. It came out. So now contrast that with if the leadership there, if they put aside a good amount of money for positive PR, for truthful PR, public relations, that now they got to go ahead and send out, you know, the basic things of establishing justice, you know, trying to eradicate poverty, all the things that Islam calls for, you know, to get rid of this nationalism, to call people to the pure monotheism, to let people see the Quran in action. Because right now there's such a negative. They just see people as backwards. They just see these people who can't speak, you can't communicate. All they have is guns with them. So what do you think about that? You know, having the proper PR and the PR of truth, of getting the truth out.
Jazakallah khair, brother. It will be extremely easy to spread the truthness than to convince people with falsehood. The convincing people with falsehood require a huge amount of budget, just like American government, you mentioned, spend $500 million on it. How much? 500 billion or 500 million?
500 million. So half a billion.
Subhanallah. Half a billion. Allahu Akbar.
Yeah, people can Google this and look this up.
You could solve problems inside the country. Subhanallah. Yeah. I would say once the government is formed, there are early stages, and I'm going to make this clear. I will never be joining any government, if it's in Afghanistan, this one or previous one whatsoever. I will always work independently as a humanitarian worker, as an entrepreneur, and Islamic da'i. I will work independently. That's the people should say clear, because it's important to make it clear. Once the government is formed and everything is okay, I think what they can do is to invite the influencers, that's the influencer economy and the world of influence, if they can invite them so they themselves can see the country, can see the justice, and then they can share it with other people, I think that would be a great PR for people to understand what Islamic values and Muslims are.
Yeah, just like Jason, who was a former, who's a Marine, I shared that story, came over there, got to experience the kindness, the hospitality of the Muslims there. And then he was given a copy of the Quran. He read the Quran with an open heart and open mind. And now he wants to accept Islam, submission to the Creator, not the creation, the way of Jesus, Moses, and the last of fellow Messenger, Prophet Muhammad. Peace and blessing be upon them all. Thank you very much.
I just want to point out this. Absolutely. Actually, I wanted to invest in the area. If I can build a place in Afghanistan, in Nuristan, and invite people from outside of Afghanistan, like non-Muslims, and they can come, for example, the living cost will be free for them. They can live there and experience the country, experience the Muslims, learn about Islam right
Great
there.
Great project.
I was planning to do something like that. So they can see the Muslims, they can learn about the religion, they can see the country and Islam in practice, and then they can go back to their home countries and make their own choice, inshallah. But you should not look at Islam just for the worldly reason. You should look at it for the most salvation reason, that what will happen to you after death, what is the reason of your life, and why you were created, and who created you. And these are more important questions you should answer. Hopefully we can create that experience for them, inshallah.
So this is what you're thinking about doing. Are you going to do, you're going to make like a project where you can invite the not yet Muslims people to come, you know, to experience Afghanistan? People would like to travel. They can learn a little bit about the culture, learn about Islam, and get to see from themselves, make the human connection.
Yes, that's the plan, inshallah.
Inshallah. So where could people, if they want to go ahead and follow you, to go ahead and keep up with, hopefully, if this project comes to fruition?
I think the best would be, since I was actually I was on YouTube, but then for 3 years I left it. Now I'm trying to come back to YouTube to explain more about Muslim entrepreneurship and how they Muslims can, you know, be good at both in dunya and akhirah. So they can definitely check out the YouTube channel, and then this project will be announced very soon, inshallah.
Beautiful. They can put your name in here. Thank you very much for giving us some history, some underground of what's happening, and enlightening us and exposing us to what we're not really getting from the mainstream media. Jazakallah khair. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me and giving me the time, akhi.
Thank you, my brother.